So we will explain why we love that song later and how it played a large role in our South by Southwest 2024. But in the meantime, I'm going to welcome you back to season eight of The Drop at DFT. We are in our South by Southwest recap season. And joining me today, me, Nancy Jundy, your humble host, COO of Digital Film Tree, is my longtime dear friend and also now my executive administrator, Kat Dominguez, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your very first Drop episode.
Cheers all around.
And it's about your very first South by Southwest.
It is. What an amazing experience that was. I mean, I want to go back soon, so I'm very much hoping that they hurry up and set the next year up. Let's just go straight to 2025 and just...
I mean, I'm not a big fan of 2024 so yeah. far, but that's a different podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, back into it. So this, believe it or not, is already our third episode. And you might be wondering, why does The Drop dedicate a season to South by Southwest? And matter of fact, this is actually our second season dedicated to South by Southwest. Well, I personally have been going for 17 years. Why? Because it's essentially a large collective of humans who all want to make the world a better place. They're a corner of it, their function, form, fashion, however they do things, they are at South by Southwest to learn from other people in other pockets and corners of the world about how they're making the world a better, more interconnected place. And there is nothing like South by Southwest that I've ever had the pleasure and joy of experiencing. And so I kind of also want to unpack for all of you what you might glean from South by. And part of what was exciting about introducing Kat to this is because I don't tend to stay in one lane at South by. You heard earlier from Dylan and Carlo, who were breaking down their workshop that they hosted at South by Southwest called On-Set VFX Supervision 101. And that was great. And they were thinking that they just needed to focus on VFX stuff. And I was like, guys, go learn about like particle dust in space and how that impacts our socioeconomic diversity back here and across countries. They didn't believe that that was a thing, but it is. It is. Anyway, so let's dive in. I feel like the easiest place to start, and don't worry, we will explain to you why we are twinsies wearing the exact same hoodie as Mark Duplass. We'll get to that later. But we figured the easiest way to kind of dive in was to dive right in. Yeah. We landed and we went straight into promoting what would be our Oscar party. So we actually had a darn fun time planning an event where that's the only one thing that like South by has not actually done is like, you know, you're doing it during the Oscars. I would like to watch the Oscars. We're here for film. So let's do Oscar stuff. So we partnered with Alamo Drafthouse and we started going around putting up our stickers all over town, which we will cut to. But we put those all over. So in Austin, during South by Southwest, the light poles, the electric boxes, everything is saran wrapped so that you can just put stickers and branding all over the place. So we had a good old time walking probably like 15,000 steps a day, putting those stickers up.
We had our good walking shoes on and plenty of water to stay hydrated. But I, when you told me about the saran wrap thing, I didn't really understand what you meant fully until actually being there and seeing it. Everything is covered in that plastic wrap. And there were already some people putting their like promotional stuff up. So literally everywhere we went, we were slapping stickers on here, on every side that people would walk through just to make sure like they can see it from coming from there, they could see it coming from over there.
You know what I just realized? We should have like saran wrapped one of those robots that were delivering stuff.
Oh my, but they kind of have a face, so I would have felt, I feel like it would have made a face if I put one on it.
It's not WALL-E.
It kind of is.
It's not WALL-E.
It kind of is because it would squint and like it would stop if it like if you were blocking it would make like a face. So I feel like it would feel very violated if I had put a sticker on it. But
I'm gonna remember this when the Rising of the Machines actually happens and we're dealing with Terminator. All right, moving it along. We also picked up our badges that night. That is my recommendation for anybody that is looking for pro tips on how to South by Southwest. Fly in on Thursday. I understand that like, hey, the conference isn't actually happening yet, but the solid news is, one, the tickets are cheaper. Mm-hmm. Two, the hotel is actually cheaper because they know most people aren't flying in on Thursdays. Three, there is no line to go pick up your badge. It goes a heck of a lot faster. Four, then you are ready and raring to go at 10 a.m. when the conference starts on Friday. You can hear the opening remarks by Hugh Forrest. You can get right into a lot of the programming. They do huge bulks of awesome programming on Friday, which is what we're going into next. So I forget how early we started our day, but we went in with Breakthrough Technologies of 2024. Do you want to talk about this one?
Sure. So it's 10 Breakthrough Technologies specifically, and it's hosted by the MIT Technology Review. I guess they essentially take tons of research on like all of these breakthrough technologies, and they have to somehow get that down, like consolidate that into just 10 for the whole year.
And there have been other people, like they let Bill Gates guest host that one year where he picked all 10 and stuff like that. But this this was their CEO of the magazine this year.
This
I think,
was, yeah, Elizabeth Bramson. And there were like, of course, at the top of the list was AI. That's on everyone's brains right now, and it was mainly a discussion on like predictions, so like a lot of what we already know, the use of ChatGPT. But
the interesting thing, and like no shade of course, and I suppose it's more of like a humble brag, Carlo Dillon, Avital Shalev, our director of creative services, she also joined us at South By. And they went to a number of the AI panels and things like that, and so did Kat and I. But honestly, here at Digital Film Tree, we've been using AI for years. And so this being such a huge year and focus on AI was kind of a whatever for us, because we've been doing it and could kind of teach a lot more.
Yeah. A lot of it was really just like talking about what to expect as far as the elections, deep fakes, the news, media, such and such. All the good, the harmful, is it going to affect jobs and whatnot?
A lot of hypotheses.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I won't go into like every single one of the technologies, but there were a couple of other really cool ones, like solar cells.
Yeah, I want those. They're like paper thin.
Yes, like literally like a film that would replace all of these like gigantic
wild
solar panels that would be on your house. They'd be way more effective and cheaper. So that's something to look forward to. And things like being able to successfully treat sickle cell disease. There was a lot of stuff in health, and like gene editing and stuff like that. Twitter killers. That was on there. I think that was actually number 10 was Twitter killers.
I have a joke, but I'd like to be able to comfortably run a business and go back to Texas. So I'm not going to make them. Yeah. I think it's important too, to shout out the Apple Vision Pro made that, which is interesting because it's clearly different than like the Oculus or, you know, other wearable technologies. So it was really interesting to see. I think that was also, that's number three.
That's number three.
Pretty high up there. Yeah. And then of course, weight loss drugs. So a lot of people in this country are on those. A lot of people taking the flights to South by Southwest. That was number four was on there.
Mm-hmm. Number four.
Chiplets. What's a chiplet?
Like modular microchips. Mm. So like, there's some dense stuff that I feel like it is available on their panel on YouTube, so you will be able to see it later. And so you can see a more in-depth explanation
we
of
might
all
do
of
a
these
pop-up
things.
Pop-up video. I don't even know who in our audience is actually old enough to remember pop-up videos, but if you are, shout out to you.
I don't know what that meant. But anyway.
Cat's 12.
I am a child.
All right.
Moving
Breaking
on.
Barriers. This one was super cool. And also, I will admit, a little bit sad in some respects. So, reminder, I speak for Nancy Jundy, not necessarily Digital Film Tree and the values that we hold, et cetera, et cetera. But this was a panel that had Brooke Shields, Katie Couric, Duchess Meghan Markle of York, Worcestershire stuffs, and then super effing cool, Nancy Wang Yun, sociologist for USC, pop culture expert, DEI, and peopleism expert. I mean, she's just a super insanely gifted, talented human. all of these people sitting on that stage were. But what shocked me, number one, Friday was International Women's Day. And all attention left that stage the second Harry walked in. Mm. There's a lot of things that I can deal with, but paparazzi is not one of them. And journalists, photographic journalists who were in the audience immediately went from people who were there to cover the scope and magnitude of what these women were saying, and the rest of South by Southwest turned into paparazzis like that. Kat and I were sitting in the back of the center section, and immediately we were pushed forward mm-hmm. by cameras coming over our shoulder just to take a picture of the back of Harry's
like
head.
Literally lenses right here, and all you hear is just the click click click, the shuttering in your ear.
Wild.
Yeah.
Just because the dude sat down. You know what? I would love it if people paid that much attention when I sat down. I would have like billboards and messages and like, and no, I'm just kidding. I would in no way appreciate that.
Yeah, no, please don't do it.
So shout out to Meghan and Harry for dealing with that and figuring out how to use their platforms for good mm-hmm. with that kind of insane attention. But also shout out to Brooke Shields. Her documentary on Hulu called Pretty Baby was a real eye-opening wake-up call for what a lot of women, I wouldn't say face, this was her like realization of what she had played a part in that had made it so difficult, not just for others who maybe did not look like her, but then the kind of box that it put her in. And so that was really interesting. And then of course, Katie Couric, who has been an absolute leader in journalism and being the face of news for the past 40 plus years on primetime network television, to have gone through what she did. I really encourage people to listen to the, or watch the YouTube or listen to the actual recording of that session. We'll learn a lot. It was a really, really good way to spend International Women's Day. I will take the next one as well, because this was also similarly really awesome, but a wake up call of how little people will think of Hollywood when there is a conference that is, again, orchestrated to interconnect people from all over the world to figure out how to make this world a better place. So someone who was absolutely one of the most spoken names in Hollywood last year was Duncan Crabtree, Ireland, from SAG-AFTRA. And we were in a room that sat probably like 300 people, and mm-hmm. there was maybe 100 people in there.
Yeah.
That
not
was
a full room.
Wild. Someone who had so much to do with the future of our industry to not have the kind of coverage that I was expecting, like a line out the door, when there is still also so much on the line to fight for them regarding AI and specifically with voiceover actors. It was incredible to just hear directly from him and have people ask like really litigious questions, like digging into the meat of it. And it was a constant, you know, he is there and on the side of the working artists. And so it was a really good eye-opening panel to see and to just kind of hear how they're already preparing for the next one in 3 years. So really like that one. Kat, you got the next one.
I do.
Where did we go after that?
We did a lot on this day.
Friday was big.
Yeah. The next one was Privacy in Progress, Redefining the Boundaries of Being Online. So it was a big panel on cybersecurity.
Part of why we went to this, another pro tip for South by Southwesters. If you know that there is something you really want to see, they're not going to make you leave the room. So if you go into the session before something you really want to see, they're not going to make you leave the room. So just a pro tip, plan for that. So like... Yeah. We went in not because this was already interesting. We love cybersecurity here. It's a culture. We have drop episodes on that. But also in part because Conan O'Brien was coming up. But back to cybersecurity.
Yes. This one was really cool. It was a discussion about a platform called Block Party or Privacy Party. I think Privacy Party is the platform, and then Block Party is one of the apps on that platform. And essentially it was the CEO, Tracy Chow, was kind of discussing what led her to create this app. She talked about her own issues with a stalker online, a lot of discrimination, especially towards women, and used a lot of real life examples, like how, like as women, we already we already don't post too much online that could give away our whereabouts, because it means people can easily find you, which is dangerous. And even with the way people don't post a lot of photos of their children online, because that's mm-hmm. an easy way for people to find your children. But yeah, she spoke a lot about this this platform that was created that would kind of give people sort of control on how much of their data is being used. So they would have a way to kind of filter just how much they're allowing certain websites to use, because mm-hmm. websites do use a lot of tracking information. So
those darn cookies, they're not all tasty.
Those cookies, yeah.
They're not all tasty, y'all.
Yeah.
Tackling the challenges facing independent producers. I like that you didn't even bother putting a link here for this
I
one.
I did not.
this was a letdown. No shade. You can go look it up if you really want to. But they were people who should have been able to talk better about tackling the challenges facing independent producers, as opposed to applauding themselves for finally getting a conversation going about helping producers in the PGA get healthcare or their own projects, as opposed to the actual challenges that independent producers who do not have the kind of access that they have to make a movie. Instead, what we got, and we sat through about 20, 30 minutes of this talk, because I really did hope that they would be there to empower other producers trying to get projects off the ground, but it really just kind of went into their own project. And so that is another pro tip that I would say. If it's not working, leave. Like, you do yeah. get to just get up and go and yeah. check out another session.
No shade. No one's even looking at you as you leave. I think we were sitting in the like one of the first rows too, and we gave it like 10 minutes maybe.
No, that was like 20. We probably get, I mean,
I maybe 15 yeah. or 20
let's
minutes.
Yeah, we'll let's do 15. Yeah yeah yeah, 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 yeah.
We gave it some time, and then we said, "Oh, we looked and another exciting one was going to come up after." So I think
that's actually how we went into the privacy one.
That's right. So yeah. we did yeah, it was the PGA, and then we went into the privacy, which was in Ballroom D, which is one of the bigger, like massive yeah. rooms. And then we stayed there because we got for Conan O'Brien and Nick Kroll. And we got some good seats because we stayed in the room after mm-hmm. the previous one ended. But yes, the next session was Conan O'Brien Must Go, which I thought was like a panel that was going to be bashing Conan O'Brien for whatever, which not
I mean,
that Conan
O'Brien
was would do
kind
that.
Kind of bash him.
I mean, it's kind of him making fun of himself.
Yeah.
But the title confused me. So anyway, we went in, and apparently Conan O'Brien Must Go is the name of the new show yeah. that he's putting out, where he travels to places.
Did you know there's a whole Conan O'Brien channel now? Also, I learned this yesterday, like joy of my life. There is also an entire channel dedicated to the show Family Ties.
Wait, you mean like on like TV? Like
yeah.
if you have cable, there's a Conan O'Brien
there's,
channel.
So I don't even have cable. I just have I like either. Whatever came with my smart TV.
Oh, wow.
Turn it on. And there's a whole Conan O'Brien. And it's funny because all these titles are like Conan O'Brien is a dirtbag, or Conan O'Brien.
Oh, he loves to make fun of himself.
Like all
huh?
of these self-deprecating titles oh. on all these different shows. And so I was like, oh, wow, he's been doing this for like a while or something.
Okay. Because I know he retired from
late night
and then went into podcasting, which he says became like a super passion of his mm-hmm. and then from that podcast kind of came this show mm-hmm. because he would talk to people, fans from around the world,
and then just show up
at their door. Like I think he went to Sweden
yeah.
or whatever, and it was hilarious. The guy had no idea he was coming. He just went into his apartment and started pulling things out of the
he had
potatoes growing in his
drawer.
Like drawer. It was hilarious. But I loved the discussion about this show. We got to see a couple clips of it before it's even aired. But what was really great was Conan would talk about how he loves going to places where people don't really know his name. Mm-hmm. He's not like this big guy. And so you really discover just how funny people are
yeah,
all over the world.
On their own.
Like
there's
on their own. Because a lot of it like is just improvisation. It's just like this is just a discussion, and it turns out to be hilarious. So sometimes the people he's talking to have no idea who he is.
Now for something even more exciting than Conan, quantum computing. Just kidding. So it actually can be really, really fascinating. And part of why I had wanted to prioritize quantum computing is because it is really the next evolution and also serves AI. So quantum computing can solve these massive complex queries, challenges, like it's the originator of things like SQL and obviously computer generation. And so the bummer was that we've been talking about quantum computing at South by Southwest at least since, like, I want to say like 2017. And back then it was really very much like a how-to, and you can do this, and, you know, here's how, here's the roadmap, and here's how this, here's some of the questions that it could answer for you. And now it felt a little bit more sponsored and difficult, and the barrier for entry had been raised. So it was a little disappointing to sit in some of these where it's just, it was over everyone's heads. And I think even people who already have made something of a niche for themselves in quantum computing, they would not fit in the larger scope of people who are tying together, you know, thousands of computers as opposed to like your own at home system, which did used to be possible. So we hung out in one of those until we jumped over to one of our favorites, how VC can repair the broken rungs of the tech ladder.
Yeah, I feel like I should actually give that one to you also. That was a really...
This was one of my... I think it was more because you do not get to hear from women in venture capital, like, ever. And this had actually nothing to do with being a woman in venture capital. It was literally about how VCs can change the course of small businesses and empowering tech leaders to do better, do more with less, and also how to best pitch with what they did have to gain additional investments. And for Jenny He, Gabby Kerr, Dana Wildboar, but Judine Small was probably my absolute favorite. She was so clear on every kind of practical application of not only how to pitch for funds, but then how to use those funds and how to navigate in business once you have the funds. It was just a really empowering session to, you know, also keep check writers accountable to who they're giving the money to, so that it doesn't just continue to be a playground for those who already have money or already have investors, but to actually look for, find, seek out, and empower those who have technologies that will serve a larger audience than things that we've already done before. A lot of the people receiving VC are people who have, they're not necessarily bringing anything new to market. Maybe they're modifying a little bit, but we actually had someone in the audience say that she was creating an app for people with disabilities to create more jobs, I think, or like to hire people with disabilities.
Yes. Yeah.
And when she was pitching, one of the VCs that she pitched to said, this is a really good idea. Like, we haven't heard of something like this before. I think this would be huge. But we've also never worked with somebody who identifies as disabled. And so we'd really encourage you to find an able-bodied man to partner with you. The audible gasp in the audience was real. So I think they kind of proved their point even with just that example of why it matters and why the check writers who are out there. Hey, I don't know, maybe give it to an employee-owned, women-led business. Saying. Yeah. After that, we went to, this one's over to you, Kat.
Malton on Movies with Frank Oz. This was, they labeled it as a live comedy event, and it was funny, but it was mainly like a live podcast episode at Esther's Follies, which was a really cool place, like literally it was in walking distance from the convention center. We ended up going there quite a lot. It was really great.
That is another pro tip. Like, generally speaking, if you keep things within walking distance of the convention center, and I mean walking distance as in 3 to 5 minutes, you will see so much more. But if you place yourself all the way at the Austin Capitol, which a lot of the South by government stuff, or at the JW Marriott, which has a lot of good stuff, but it is a solid like 10-15 minute walk, and then you're waiting in line, you could miss a lot of stuff. So my big pro tip is to stick within a 3 to 5 minute walk max from the convention center.
Yes.
Which Esther's Folly is maybe like a 2 to 3 minutes.
It was fast, and we bumped into we got to walk over with Mr. Maltin, Leonard Maltin, the host of the Maltin on Movies podcast, and his daughter Jessie was there also helping host the podcast. But this was really awesome because, full transparency, I just from the name Frank Oz, I did not know about a lot of what he did.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I know. It's
for serious?
I've lived under a rock for a very long time. Okay?
Did you know that he worked on Star Wars?
No.
I didn't know that
he was the Yoda character.
Wow.
I didn't know. I didn't know that he...
So like when I said, I was like, wait, last week we were sitting next to George Lucas.
No, by then I had looked... By then I had looked it up. But at the time, I didn't know.
Oh, I should explain that. The week before we saw Frank Oz, we were at the Ace Eddie Awards, where George Lucas was presenting a lifetime achievement to Walter Murch, which is a whole other thing because Return to Oz is freaking terrifying. No relation. But anyway, it's still just.
But yeah, I didn't know that he was, you know, did like The Dark Crystal and The Muppets Take Manhattan and like the voice of like Piggy.
He's Miss Piggy!
Miss Piggy and like Fozzie and all of like, it hadn't registered in my brain. So, you know, finally when we're going, I'm looking it up before they're starting. But this was such an impactful discussion because they kind of went into, you know, sort of his beginnings, how he like emigrated to the U.S. at a very young age. I think it was like during D-Day or after D-Day or something like that.
I think he was born on D-Day or something.
Or he was born on D-Day. Yeah. Whole wild. But he kind of just talked about, you know, starting off doing like marionette puppets and then moving into actual puppets. He talked about, I think Jim Henson kind of brought him in. Maybe it was Sesame Street to start with. And one of the things that that Oz said was it took him 4 years to actually start doing voices. He would do the puppets and moving them, but he wouldn't do the voices because he was too afraid. And there was something that Leonard said. He was like, was it stage fright? And Frank said, no, it wasn't stage fright. It was actually being afraid of not being good enough. And that's why he didn't do it. And so, like, he talked about the differences between stage fright and the fear of, like, just not believing in yourself. And that really resonated with me because, look at me, it took me how many years to come over here? More than 4 years.
For those who don't know, Kat is an artist herself. She actually gave us the wrap gifts for the Ted Lasso party. She did a sticker pack for those. For those of you who joined us for the holiday party, the Mean Girls holiday party, she also did a sticker pack for those. She has been our resident artist for years, providing like sketches and elaborate pieces for like people's birthdays or just to honor them. And also, last, never least, probably actually what I should have led with, 9 times out of 10, if a client of ours is like, can we get a look dev for this, that, or the other thing? I'll be like, Kat, what are you up to? Do you think that you could find some inspiration in the next 24 to 36 hours to do this thing? And she always did.
I always did. And every time before you would ask that, I would have it going like through the worst art block. So I wasn't doing anything. And then you asked and I would just say, yeah, because it was you asking. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, I could do anything. It was amazing.
And then she did. She went to Austin. She got to hang out with Frank Oz. And
yeah.
You know, the week before, like George Lucas, weird life. Weird
it
that you
is
were
a
like,
weird,
I'll just,
I know.
I won't work with you for like 5 straight years. And then in like a very short period of time, I'm like, wasn't that a dumb idea?
I still like, it's still surreal sometimes. But I'll end this part of this session, the Maltin on Movies, with one of the things that he said that was really great. He said he doesn't do voices, he does characters, because it's the voices come, like, they come naturally after the characters developed. So, you know, Yoda didn't just have a voice just because they made the puppet. They had to kind of develop, like, who is Yoda? What is the character? Mm-hmm. And then the voice just comes. And I thought, man, that's so real. That's amazing. It's a great way to put it.
Love that.
Yeah.
And then that evening after that, I was going to call it an evening.
An evening.
For those of you who've been watching or listening to The Drop for any amount of time, you have heard us talk about, you have heard from the Nice brothers. This was the second time at South By that we got to spend time with at least one niece. Jason niece came down briefly for the conference, kind of. Both of them are very important, you know, fancy pants producers and had to be taken away. But we did get one evening to hang fireside and talk about some of what we had gotten to see, meet some of their independent filmmaking friends. And then we had to go to bed because Sunday was a big day. You have already heard from, if you are listening to this podcast or watching, you already saw or heard from Dylan Shadinsky and Carlo Vega. It was their big day on Sunday to teach visual effects on set 101. It was pretty packed room.
It was a fully packed room. Some people would even come in and they would sit on the floor because the chairs were all packed up. But it was probably one of the best presentations I had seen, because, you know, all of these people doing their workshops and panels, they're creating their presentations, their keynotes. And as far as like just the way it flowed and the look of it, they did a great job. And everyone was so engaged.
Yeah.
People clapped after some of the reels they played, like, which I don't think Dylan and Carlo were expecting at all. They were surprised. But they were so impressed, and it made such an impression on a lot of the audience, because they were like young filmmakers, students, people working on big things, people working on small things.
Yeah, I adore Dylan and Carlo in part because it would never register to them that they are who they are. Like, they have massive credits. They've been doing this work for so long, and they're both just like absolutely charismatic, adorable people. Mm-hmm. But like, I just don't think it ever registers to them of like how cool their jobs actually are. Like, so playing to an audience like that, where they're also just being incredibly generous, sharing this much wisdom in a succinct and immediately applicable way, it blew the roof off that place. And we have heard from so many of you. I have no doubt that at least one person from this workshop is listening to this right now. And we thank you for reaching out and following along. Like, we're excited to work with you at some point.
Yeah. And it was cool because a lot of them afterwards were excited to come to our Oscar party, which we'll get to later on. Mm-hmm. And probably because they wanted to spend some more time with Carlo and Dylan also. They were a little mystified.
There was a little, wow, you are as cool as you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Explore the unexplainable and where's the creativity in quantum? We did not dig in quite as much on either of these. Carlo Dylan Avital, I love that that's how they chose to unwind after their session, was to go to a session on quantum computing. And then the Explore the Unexplainable, True Crime with Nat Geo. I thought this was going to be like I'll Be Gone in the Dark type situation. It wasn't really that. But it was really interesting on the ethics of being a journalist in the field, and like, do I stop this person actively doing a crime? Do I feed this, you know, child who's been starving for days? Do I stop that monkey from being eaten by the cheetah? Like, all these different things. And so it was not what we were expecting, but it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then
the Oscar party, what we had been leading up to with all of our,
it was a lot of fun,
15,000 step days of putting stickers all over the place. We got to the Alamo Draft House. We had our table set up. We were ready.
We were a sold out crowd. So that the theater that we had, obviously, you know, South By has taken up Alamo for a lot of their own screenings. We were lucky enough to still get one theater, the smaller one, which sat 40 something. And we had a guest list of like 60 with a wait list. And then even on top of that, like, there were people turned away at the door because we were, you know, full up. But should we tell them? Should we tell people?
I think so.
Next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We got the highball. Mm-hmm. So for those who are familiar with the South Lamar Alamo Draft House, we have the highball, the bar inside of South Lamar, which seats a heck of a lot more people, and the huge, like, no, you're not sitting in the theater seats, but this makes mingling and hanging out with people that much easier. We will have three bartenders, we'll have our tables on the floor, and we'll have the giant screen. and just be able to hang out.
It's going to be so amazing.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to Oscars next year.
Yeah.
Watch them like move it back to February or something, and then we're like, yeah.
Well,
fingers crossed that doesn't happen. Academy, at least give us 1 year in the highball, okay? Thanks so much.
For real.
And that was our Sunday night. We were pretty tuckered. That was a big day.
We were pooped after that. It was a lot.
It looks like we didn't do a lot on Monday. What is this?
Well, I think we were recouping a bit. It was a really long Sunday.
It really was.
And we gave ourselves a well-needed
break. We slept in, Oh my gosh, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. I don't think I had ever slept in that much in my life. Like, just stone cold. Like, I was out. That was pretty amazing. But yeah, we gave ourselves some grace. We got some rest in. And then we were ready for...
one of the best panels, period, honestly. Oh, yeah. I hope... Oh, the good. This is a YouTube, so you can actually watch this. Yes. This was hilarious. I'll just kind of announce it, and then you maybe go into it. But sure. Mark Duplass, Mel Eslin, Barrett O'Brien, Natalie Palmeads, Courtney Peruso, Richard Whitaker. So Mark Duplass of the Duplass Brothers, Mark and Jay. Mel, I think, is their right hand. Like, she runs their company. Barrett O'Brien, was he like the lawyer? I forget.
I believe he is a playwright and has done a couple indie things with them. Mm-hmm. They've worked on projects together.
Richard Whitaker was I got to actually meet him with somebody who you will meet later, Austin Nauert, the senior programmer for film and television. Richard was coming backstage to the green room where I was getting to hang out with Austin for a little bit. But he was there to basically then go over to lead this panel.
Yeah.
But then Natalie and Courtney.
Hilarious. So they were there promoting one of the, I believe it was a series actually that they put together.
An independent television
series.
So that's the thing. The Duplass brothers actually were judging the independent film or the independent television category this year.
Yeah. And I think that they were discussing kind of how the project came about. I think he found them on Twitter.
On Twitter
and reached out to kind of help them with this project. But it was really cool hearing their discussion on sort of like, how do we kind of get these projects up and running? And Mark would talk about how it's really a two-way street. Like, the way that their production goes is they're looking for people who are going to put this project together, whether it's a yes or a no. Like, they're going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. So why not come in and give them some of the help that they need? But it's really like a both sides are kind of giving what they need to make these things like a reality. And it was really cool kind of just getting to hear about like ways to cut costs on projects, all the things that might keep you from developing your series or show, mm-hmm. like money, resources, like just make the thing with what you have and the people you have, the people you like.
I mean, some of the biggest takeaways for me were they were very clear. They were like, if you have an idea, make it 6 episodes long, 22 minutes long, and each episode should be under $8,000. Because if you can pitch a concept with that much ready to go, then you've already proven out like the actual story arc and that it can be made low cost. So if that was $8,000, it's a total of $48,000, which like, yeah, you and I probably don't have that just laying around, but like if you can make something for $8,000 or less and then show that to a potential distributor who would invest in the actual production of it, you're looking pretty good as compared to people who are just going in with like a script and a pitch. You've already proven out something here that you took to, you know, shoot it in your living room, shoot it in the park. Don't let permit people catch you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then submit it to a festival like South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how the start of South by Southwest when it came to like film and TV, I believe, was kind of just like these people with indie films needing a place to kind of premiere their stuff. Right.
I mean, I come from like the whole like max out a credit card and pick up a handy cam kind of people. So I mean, that's kind of where I always assumed that the industry would get back to. I just didn't think I was going to be like old. I didn't.
You're not.
I'm
old.
Not old, but like I didn't think it would be like, I don't know. It's just wild. Like you go back to the origins of like Slacker and Clerks and like all these movies that are now like canon and like old. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh God, I remember like running around with a handy cam, literally like a JVC, like tape thing, just filming whatever. And, you know, Clerks was made for like $27,000. I think Slacker was made for like $14,000 or something. And those won Sundance.
They're
and
great.
I believe we are back. You haven't seen either one. You haven't seen either one. She is a child.
I think I've seen Clerks.
Really? What does 37 mean?
I don't know.
Yeah, you haven't seen Clerks. That's great. But yeah, so it's just interesting to have gotten back to that place where they can kind of qualify it and give an indie filmmaker hack to some of those things.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't tell you how to have like good taste or comedic timing. So you have to come in with those things. But yeah, this was a really impactful session, and that brings us to our sweaters. So it was pretty funny during the Q&A, the very first thing that somebody asked was, where did you get your hoodie from? And this was the hoodie that Mark Duplass was wearing. And for those of you who do not know, To Write Love on Her Arms, that is the organization, or TWOLAH, To Write Love on Her Arms. All right, they even did that acronym wrong, but it is an organization that helps people struggling with depression and anxiety to connect with better mental health resources so that they don't have to struggle alone and hopefully never have to consider ending things in a way where they wouldn't struggle because they've ended things, as opposed to finding the help that they need. So we wore these also to just kind of stand with Mark for using his platform in that way.
Yeah, really amazing. And it's super cozy.
It is pretty cozy, but it is warm. It's very warm.
It is.
Warm.
We have the air
the
on
AC
quite
is.
High.
Well, all right.
Yeah, but then we went into that night, and
Ida!
It was such a great night. Yeah. Ida Rodriguez, our very own Omar's mama.
Omar Ellison, who you got to meet on the Diversity Below the Line episode last season for DFT Talks. Not trying to blow him up, but he is related to a very, very funny lady. Ida Rodriguez, who did two shows at South by Southwest. And the first one we watched that night.
Yeah, that night. The Entre Nos Presents Comedy Crossroads. This was, I believe it was an all Latino, Latina cast, which was, I was really excited about. And there were like four or five different comedians. Ida was hilarious. And I mean, they were all, they were all really funny. That also was at Esther's Follies, which was a great night. But yeah, it was a highlight for sure. Mm-hmm. I loved getting to meet her. I think we didn't meet her that night. I mean, you'd met her before. I hadn't met her, but I was excited to because fellow Puerto Rican. But yeah, she was incredible.
I feel like we've probably not covered everything, but also South By is exhaustive. It's not necessarily exhausting because we come back really excited by, enthralled. Like, what did Rollins say? That every year I come back from South By, it's like watching a log get thrown on the fire.
Oh, it like ignites you.
Yeah, it just really does. I get really excited with what's possible and knowing that there are other people out in the world, like just actively looking at, striving for making this place better.
Yeah, I mean, even I think we were in line for one of these shows and met like an environmentalist who...
Oh, Dr. Ed Barnsley! Yes, he also had a session at South by Southwest.
Yeah, he had written a book on like the effects of climate change on like housing and just like the infrastructure of buildings and all of that stuff, and kind of like the solutions of, well, our environment, the atmosphere, global warming, it ain't gonna get any better.
Yeah,
so
right?
How do we prepare for floods and
the
all
environmental
of that stuff?
Design studio? Yeah. Dr. Ed Barnsley is an award-winning social venture. He's British. I'm not just like, you know, coming at it for that. But he did Strong, Smart, Safe Buildings to Survive Climate's Big Punches. That's intense.
And we just happened to bump, we met him while in line. And I thought, I mean, what a great part of the South by Southwest mm-hmm. experience is that you don't know who you're going to meet and just how much they're impacting the world at large. Yeah. I mean, there's everyone who's putting a session together or who got their panel or workshop accepted, you know, came into it with like, what's a problem that we have and what's a way that we can resolve it and make people aware of it. And yeah. that's kind of fascinating because so much of, I mean, there are so many panels that we didn't get to see that we would have wanted to see. Like there was one with astronauts, like literally they were filming their session live mm-hmm. from space.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think there is South by Southwest EDU, South by Government, South by Comedy, South by Sports, South by Film, South by Innovation. I think there's like something specifically for VCs. Like they have so many tracks, like so many people in their like their orbit, the realm, the lane, whatever you want to call it, where they are just running full force at the problems that they want to solve for the betterment of all of us. And there have been so many sessions over the years, like, you know, I made the joke at the start about how, you know, you can go to a panel and learn about the particle dust being measured in space, which is coming from the factories on the ground, and the satellites can measure it to quantify how much product is coming out of those factories. And then that gets fed into Google, where world economies actually sit on top of and learn because of how much product is being output, or even the ships that pull into harbor. You know, to this day, you still look as a ship comes into port and there are lines on the ship that tells you how much that ship weighs, which tells you how much product is in that ship, which can then be seen from space and be seen by all these world economies gauging how much product is being output by other countries. That I learned that in a South by Southwest panel.
My brain is getting wrinkly as you speak.
It's wild. And that I think it was Sweden that like this is how they gauge whether or not the world's going to go into a recession, based on the particle dust in the air and the weight of the boats. I was like, oh my golly,
that's insane.
Yeah, it was wild. So let's bring it home. You this last one that we did. This was the end of our South by with Dr. Joy Boal.
I wasn't going to say the last name because I don't want to butcher it.
I think it matters. Boulamini. But I am butchering it. Boulamini. I'm sure, doctor, I apologize. I hope you will forgive me. I'm sure I butchered that. But Boulamini, a conversation with her, founder of Algorithmic Justice League and AI bias expert, author and artist, The Coded Gaze. Who has the power to shape these technologies with preferences and the priorities given to them? AI facial recognition technology in the hands of Amazon, Facebook, IBM, Google that are leading to false arrests. This was a huge, impactful session.
There was so much. A lot of what she was talking about is in a book that she just released that I believe called Unmasking AI. But she was talking about sort of like the coded gaze as being like, you know how like there's the male gaze, there's the white gaze, the colonial gaze, all the gaze. And the coded gaze is essentially the AI version and sort of like AI discrimination essentially, because she used an example of a woman who was pregnant and who was falsely arrested because of facial recognition that took her face and thought that it was mm-hmm. a man's face. And so she was 8 months pregnant and arrested. And a lot of sort of what the discussion was on these biases is because a lot of facial recognition technology, it's harder to recognize women's faces. Like men, it's a lot easier to recognize men's faces, but why? But also when it came to like, let's say suddenly you have a darker skin tone, then it's even harder to recognize. And so there's all of these biases that are coming up when it comes to AI, because all of the information that is fed to AI is biased. It's like, who's feeding the information? Like,
and it doesn't have to be nefarious necessarily. I mean, it's also who has those jobs and who does this fall to? I mean, there's so much research on what it does to people to root out, like, you know, child abusers, looking through all of these things. And so there's simple AI, like what you and I participate every single time we verify that we're human, like mark the crosswalk, mark the traffic light, like all these different things where we are actually and actively helping to train AI. But then there is also the computer that is scouring through all of these collected images that are getting uploaded into the internet that people are then responsible for to go through to identify if there's like child abuse or, you know, things of that nature being uploaded into the internet, and then how you catch people. But, you know, a lot of these people are of a same demographic oftentimes. And so it's easier to look at somebody that looks kind of like you and say, oh, male. Mm-hmm. I would skew male or I would skew female or something of that nature. So it really is an interesting part of why DEI is also incredibly important, because we have to take responsibility for, if this is artificial intelligence, the intelligence came from somewhere. We have to train it for all scenarios.
Yeah. So it was a lot about, you know, accountability and how, especially if we're going to be using so much of this technology. I believe she talked about a lot of TSA is beginning to already mm-hmm. use, like implementing, you know, facial recognition, the way it's being used in warfare.
That'd be scary.
And so she developed the Algorithmic Justice League because there needs to be a way to keep these things accountable. Mm-hmm. Because of there's already the issue of equity and discrimination. So how do we get ahead of that? As this technology is developing and being more widely used.
All right, Kat. Let's bring it home. I noticed that I have takeaways here.
I added some.
You added three. I thought we were supposed to do five.
We were, and some of yours are similar to mine.
There's a collaborative five takeaways, which equaled seven.
You go for yours, and then I'll add on to it.
Well, I'll start, and then you go, and then we go, and then we both, yeah. Okay. I feel bad for those who are only listening. They're like, what is wrong with these two?
Just watch the video.
We are the futurists. Honestly, so much of what we walked into panel wise, like virtual production on a micro scale was one. And it's like, we've been doing that since 2017 with like Lasso and Umbrella. It was just, it's weird that there were a lot of panels on that this year. And I was like, bro, that's so 2019. Anyway, and then also AI. There were a lot of people talking about how, you know, at some point this is going to be used for this, that, and the other thing. And here we've been doing that since 2021, I think. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that were emerging as new that those of us who've been at DFT for a while, we're just kind of like, well, that's pretty old hat. So that was a huge takeaway for me for this year, was just how future oriented we've always been. But especially right now, it feels like the curve. I'm glad that I can see some people coming around the bend as well.
Yeah.
What was one of yours?
I put that curiosity felt like a really big theme this year. How kind of we engage with curiosity, how to ask the right questions, which lead to advancements, not only in leading technologies, but in the indie world. I thought that there were just so many ways to address problems. And I thought that was really fascinating. And it made me feel like, yeah, there are questions that I have that maybe I never thought to ask. And these are kind of, it inspires me to think more on those questions and maybe start figuring out, well, what do we do with that? And how do we do stuff with it?
Yeah. Every day that we are not making our own content is a wasted day. That's so dumb, man. We're a post house. Like, yeah, and it's stuff. One of the biggest costs for any project is post-production. We have gifted people, even in production. Like, this doesn't happen in a bubble. You know, Jacob Tillman was in here setting up the cameras. Matthew Kirkman was helping to troubleshoot. Lacan De Leon is out there like busting through, Paul Edmiston is busting through the dailies for this. And then when we do get into post, you not only have Lacan De Leon as the editor and Sylvia Spinelli as the producer. You have Kat, who is our production designer over here. You have Dominic Rocha and Jay Tello, who are helping with the B-roll. You have Sophie, who is doing all of the marketing for it on social, etc. And then you have Sherry Sparks, who does all of our graphics. Like, there's so much that goes into all of this. And I love the drop. I super love the drop. But this is like my journalist side of things, the creativity that we could show in doing our own little sitcom or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, every day that we're not creating our own content was absolutely, it rang through and true for me that it is a wasted day if we're not doing that.
Absolutely. I have, what is an enemy to creativity? Fear. That's big for me because I'm a scaredy cat. But Frank Oz taught me that it's okay to be afraid, but you need to have people who are in your corner who are going to kind of push you to do what they see in you that you might not see in yourself. You got to just do it. Just don't wait until you feel like you have everything already. Just start. Just get started.
Bravery is not a lack of fear. It is the wherewithal to go out and meet it.
Dang. Awesome stuff.
That's one to chew on. Not thinking outside of the box will be the end of us. That was an aha moment for me, that we should be making more more connections with the people that are actually making the work. So the DPs and the editors and even actors and actresses. A lot of that doesn't necessarily immediately connect for us here at DFT, but these are the people that are making the work. And none of us are here because we were like, you know, it'd be fun spending 16 hours on set, you know, or like managing all of our media files and stuff like that. We're here because we love what it results in. There was a calling for it, a passion for hearing and having our voices heard. So it's something where I think we need to get outside of our own box. Like, we have to spend more time with the people who are making all of it, every form and facet of it.
Yeah. I'm going to take this next one from you. You've said this when we were at South By, but that, like, no one who's there is like better than you or like beneath you. Like it's like a level playing field there. Like, I think there was one night we were waiting on our tuk-tuk. We were in a corner and it was Cole Sprouse just like comes riding in on a tuk-tuk. And it's just like totally nonchalant. It's just like nothing. There was no big crowds coming to him. I think he was just there because he was promoting one of the films that he did for that in the festival. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there were so many. It's like Selena Gomez was there, like so many people. And like, you go there and you don't, like, I never felt like I was beneath any of the people that were there. And I thought that was amazing. I was really glad that you said that because it puts it into perspective. Like, everyone is here because we're here to solve problems, address things that people might not be aware of, and then also promote our content and like show people like what we made, that what we're proud of.
And it's not even like a they're just, everybody has a moment, I guess, is the way to say it. Like, there were years where I got to be a speaker, and then there have been so many years where I was just grateful to be there and learning from, like, there's, seriously, like, the guy who we met in line, and he was like, do you have a weatherproof, blah, 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 and I was like, no, and he's like, well, I could help you with that. And it's, there's so many people. There's, I don't remember the word, but there's this Danish word of like, no one's head is above someone else's, because we're all here, all trying to survive the same thing, navigate the same thing. At the end of the day, sure, somebody might be on TV or somebody might be in space, but ultimately this is still a thing that we are doing together. And at South by Southwest, you might be the person whose film was premiering, like Cole Sprouse was showing up, I think, at like the Immaculate premiere.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if he was in it, but he was there.
But the wild thing, like Sydney Sweeney, the star of this movie, she's over the moon, just proud of the fact that they even got the film made. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't about, you know, being the star of it, but these are Herculean efforts that a lot of people go through to bring something to life that ultimately gets called content. when at South by Southwest, it's really truly like a labor of love that gets celebrated by a lot of people. And so for me, I think one of the last ones for me was that so many people have a fear. Like a lot of what was coming from stage were people talking about having to push through fear, or it was fear of having done something that became the motivator. For me, I have a lack of fear that borders on stupidity. It's one of the best things about me.
Fearless.
I whatever, feet first, go. But can you imagine if we didn't have Frank Oz? Like, that's insane. Fail faster. What does it matter? Who cares if you fail? Fail faster. Like, get it out of the way, because then at least you're like, well, I tried that. That didn't work. So let me try the other thing. That didn't work either. Let me try this. Oh, shucks, that works. Like, just get it over and done with. Get it out of the way as fast as possible. So,
yeah.
Got anything else, Kat?
I think I already said it, but I'll say it again. Surround yourself with people who believe in you and your craft.
Yeah, girl.
Really. Like, you need people in your corner. Like, yeah. There are so many things that I've yet to do, but that I definitely would not have started had I not had people who could acknowledge, who can see your talents and your gifts and then tell you, because I'm always being like, oh, it ain't that good. And they're like, you're just like, shut up. I'm going to punch you in the face.
That's not how it goes. That seems really violent, but yeah.
With love.
With love. So much love.
So much love.
Well, Kat, that was our South by Southwest.
Let's 2024. Let's go. Take me back. Next year.
Should we, I mean, yeah.
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 More tuk-tuks.
More tuk-tuks.
Yeah.
Ride tuk-tuks.
And I got to tell you, every time we got in a tuk-tuk, you know what happened? I'll tell you. This. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another episode of The Drop. We will be back with you again next week. And talking to an agent, why you need one and why your film needs one. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We'll see you next time on The Drop. I'm sure your dad and women, your life and mine. All those times I said that I love you.